So I work for Google. I work in this very office, well, around the corner where we all work. They keep us away from the salespeople who are based here. I don't know why. I've been here for a bit over 2 years now, and when I started, I was working on some of the big pipeline systems that Dan was speaking about earlier. So my previous background to that was in software engineering. So distributed consensus algorithms. I think they're pretty interesting. Who remembers this slide from this morning? So, who wants an automatic pony? Okay, good, that's a few people, great. Now, I want an automatic pony as well, and I'll get into the reasons why, but I think that distributed consensus algorithms are gonna play a pretty big part of the guts of the automatic pony if and when we get it. So this stuff is important. Now, I do also think that much of the tooling around these algorithms kind of it's still falling into the bucket of the middle bucket of Todd's slides, where you know it's kind of solved, but it's also kind of not yet ready and a bit broken in deployment. And one of the other big problems as well is many of us don't really understand what these things are and how to use them, or at least I didn't until a couple of years ago. So I think that's a thing that we need to know more about, and that's why this talk exists. So I will, in a few moments, I will get onto exactly what distributed consensus is or is not. But first, I will contend that it is, in fact, the road to true and lasting bliss. Who here is in an on-call rotation of some kind? Yeah, me too. Okay, so when I was a shiny, newly minted Google SRE, it was one of my first ever weekend shifts, and I was terrified because I was on call for this enormous thing. And, you know, I was like, oh my God, what if it breaks? So I got this, it was like 12:30 or 1 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, and one of my colleagues pings me, a colleague from another team who was on call for one of the things that uses the output of one of the things that I was on call for, right? Because this is Google and we don't just have one team, we have many of us. Anyway, he says, oh no, the world is on fire, this giant thing is down. When is your system going to catch up? And I was like, oh my God, I never got paged. And I looked at my pager and verified that I had not, in fact, been paged. And I was like, oh no, our monitoring is broken. It's the end of the world. So I looked, and it turns out that my system had actually never fallen behind. It had just, you know, weathered this huge, big outage perfectly. And I was like, great, okay, now I need not worry. My system is good. So why did this happen? And it happened because the system was well-designed and used distributed consensus appropriately to make sure that entire large systems can go away that it relies on, and we never even notice. The work just flows smoothly somewhere else and comes back whenever it can. So distributed consensus is great if you like to sleep in the morning and enjoy your croissant on a Sunday afternoon without being paged. So where are some places that you might use these systems, and what can go wrong if you do not? So here's a pretty common setup. You've got two servers, server A and server B. They're managing some kind of state or content between the two of them. And the idea is this. Server A is the master right now, so server A gets all the state mutating operations. Whenever something changes, it tells server B, so server B is like a hot fallback. They're communicating with each other via heartbeats. So server A is kind of saying, hey, server B, you still there? And server B is going, yeah, are you still there? And as long as that keeps happening and server A stays up, it remains the master. However, if server B at any point decides that it can't talk to server A, it's gonna try to assume mastership, because it assumes that server A has gone away, and now it's in charge. It can start accepting your state mutating operations. And so the system stays up. Great. For extra reliability, you might also do something like have server B, you know, shoot server A in the head just in case it's in some weird state, so, you know, require it to reboot itself. Now, anyone ever worked with a system like this? Yeah, it's pretty common, right? Yeah. Okay, so what can go wrong? Something goes wrong in the network between the two things. So they can't talk to each other anymore, but the outside world can still talk to both of them. Now they both think they're the master, right? This is not good. Now they're both accepting state mutating operations. What happens next? Your SREs and sysadmins and developers are spending several very, very uncomfortable hours trying to recover that state and get the thing back into good order. Your mean time to recovery from this kind of problem is pretty horrible. You can lose loss, you can lose your data, you can corrupt data. This is a very, very bad state of affairs. So this kind of heartbeat situation, it's pretty commonly used, but it's not actually adequate to the problem. Because split brain, it's this classic split brain situation, right? But you can use distributed consensus algorithms to reliably elect a master that will never get you into a state where you think you have to. It can avoid split brain. Here is another kind of problem. So here we've got like a cluster with four nodes in it. So we can see I drew this lovely kind of Google Slides art with a little cloud around it to show that this is one logical cluster. So the machines in this, or the processes in this cluster, are deciding who is in the cluster by, you know, kind of pinging each other and using some kind of like heartbeaty, gossipy things. Kind of similar to our master-slave arrangement that we had on the previous slides. And again, a similar kind of thing can happen. Oh no, our network is now partitioned. Now we have two subsets that can talk to each other, and they think that they're now two separate clusters or two instances of the same cluster. And again, you can have problems and fallout from this where you have split brains and two things accepting state mutation operations where they shouldn't. And this is also a course for badness. This is also the kind of problem that can be really annoying to troubleshoot in production because it's non-obvious what's going on. So group membership. Which group am I in? What are the components of this group? This is logically the same as the distributed consensus problem, and we need to use these algorithms for it. So I looked really hard, but it's really hard to find any kind of image that says I'm an SRE, not a babysitter. So, you know, here we go. We'll just have to pretend we're still in the 1990s. So who works with some kind of system where you've got more than one kind of replica of something? And when some problem exists, it requires a human to flip it over to the backup. Ah, a few people. Ah, many people. Yes, this is quite common. Okay, now what if you have a highly, highly sharded data store with, you know, hundreds or thousands of shards and something terrible happens and a whole bunch of them go into the state? Yeah, you're going to have a lot of work to do. It's not a great pattern, and if there's no reason why a human can do this better than a machine. There's no reason why a human can do a better job of deciding which servers are up and available and contactable than a distributed consensus algorithm can. So this is an instance where we can avoid feeding the machines with human blood. That's why I say that distributed consensus is a big part of the solution to our automatic pony. So what is it? What is this distributed consensus thing that we've been talking about? So it's actually a fundamental problem in distributed computing. And basically it says this: we want to reach some agreement between a group of processes that are connected by an unreliable communications network. I mean, is there any communications network that's not unreliable? Anyone got one of those? No. Right, so this is actually pretty relevant to what we do. And basically all a distributed consensus protocol does is it agrees on one thing one time. And the history of distributed consensus is pretty much like this. So 1985, a pretty famous paper was written by Fisher, Lynch, and Patterson called the FLP impossibility paper, which basically says that in an unreliable network, you can't guarantee that anything will ever happen, ever. Which is true, because it's, you know, but it all depends on the degree of unreliability in the real world. So late 1980s, somebody says to Leslie Lamport, hey, you can't do this. And he goes, well, I'll have a look at that. And it turns out that he invented Paxos, which was one of the first algorithms to solve this problem. Around the same time, Barbara Liskov and one of her PhD students also invented this thing called view-stamped replication, which for some reason never took off, even though it's equally good and pretty much does the same thing. So then we roll into the 1990s, and everyone is ignoring Paxos. They were confused, or they were doing J2EE or something, whatever. I guess that hadn't quite happened yet. That was the noughties. So 2001, that old paper from 1985 won the Dijkstra Prize. Distributed systems start to sort of become a thing. At around that point, we have the internet and big web-scale systems start happening. 2006, we released the Google Chubby paper, which is backed by distributed consensus. And people kind of start to go, hey, this kind of system where you can have a really consistent view of some metadata and do naming and stuff, that's pretty handy. A couple of years later, we get the open source version, which is Zookeeper. And 2010 and onwards, we've had this huge explosion of research into these protocols. And we've got some more good tools, the Etsy and Doozer. So this is starting to catch on. And how it works, I'm not going to go into a great deal of detail on the actual operations of these protocols, because I spent once about 3 months reading all the papers, and you go, we don't have that long. But basically, it's like this. There's like two phases. You have a proposer and a set of acceptors, and they do a couple of round trips of message passing, where basically the proposer says, hey, I'm proposing this value for this view ID. And the acceptors go, cool, I promise not to accept any other value for that view ID or a lower one. And then if that goes well, the proposer then says, are we accepted? Are we cool, guys? And they all go back, yep, cool. Unless something else happened in the meantime and somebody proposed a higher view. So it's like two phases, two round trips. And it works. But you notice here that we have two round trip times. Now, when you're running big systems, very often you want to run different parts of your system in different failure domains. Now, that usually means that your stuff is pretty far apart. So a couple of round trips can be quite a big cost. And that's one of the big problems that we have with distributed consensus algorithms and one of the things that we need to work around. It's worth mentioning here that there are other consensus algorithms than Paxos. So vstamp replication, I mentioned, Barbara Liskov, and so on. We got Raft has been a lot in the news the last couple of years. And there's a bunch of implementations of that floating around too. There is Zab, which is the basis of Zookeeper. There's a really cool one that nobody knows about called Mencius, which is a variant that has a rotating... it's more efficient than Paxos. It has a rotating leader so that if you've got clients in a bunch of different places, they don't have to like ping something around the world to do a transaction. And then you've got the bazillion variants of Paxos that exist, and I think there are at least 50 at this point. So... distributed consensus lets you agree on something exactly once, doesn't keep a record of it, doesn't do anything else. This is no use when you're building a distributed system, no use at all. So what you actually have to do is you build software components on top of it. So the fundamental concept here is a thing called a replicated state machine. This is a program where it has some state and you can change the state. And what you do is you run a distributed consensus transaction every time you want to change the state. This means that your machine is in sync everywhere, which is pretty great. One thing that is a special case of a replicated state machine is a data store. Data stores are useful, right? Okay, cool. So any kind of data, you can store it in a replicated state machine, like key value stores. There are more complex databases available. So there's Google Spanner, uses distributed consensus plus some cool hacks around time. If you want any kind of program to run reliably, no matter what happens, what you do is you say, I'm going to run N replicas of this, and one of them will always be the leader. And I picked the leader through distributed consensus. That's really handy. That's like an eternal running process that, you know, if one process fails, it's just going to fail over. Any kind of reliable queuing is actually theoretically the same as distributed consensus. And again, we can think that a queue is like a specialized data store. So that kind of follows. Then there is any sort of distributed locking. So here's an example. You're running a MapReduce type job. You got two phases. You got N processes that you want to finish your map phase. You want to make sure that you want to have like a barrier, and then you want them all to go in the reduce phase. To do that correctly, you need distributed locking. So that needs to be backed with distributed consensus. So that's all great. And lots of cool things we can do. We can build lots of cool system components. but we go back to this issue of taking two round trip times to do any sort of write or reliable read. So that means that if you've got replicas on either side of the Atlantic, you can do like half a dozen or so transactions every second. That's not very good. So two ways around this, and they're pretty much the two ways that we get around everything. So we shard and we batch. So if you're running a big system that where the data logically shards in some way and you're running some kind of data store component, you shard your data and you run a bunch of parallel shards. You can also batch. So for example, if you're running a system that allocates IDs sequentially, you might batch requests for IDs, so until you have like 10 or 20 requests, and then issue one giant transaction that does all of those and return the results. And that's fine to do as well. So there are ways to make distributed consensus perform, but they require a bit of thought. So I don't have slides on this, but there's also the sort of the opposite way of running distributed consensus where it's all done locally in the same data center. This is a little bit, we don't do this much at Google, but other people have done research on this. There's this very cool system called Smarter that uses distributed consensus on in a local data center to get performance better than local database replication, but with a much stronger consistency guarantee, so you don't have that few milliseconds lag between updates on the leader and updates on the followers. So you never have to kind of go away and find dropped transactions. Their constraints are basically disk I/O, and they have a whole bunch of really cool disk scheduling algorithm stuff. So the most common optimization of Paxos gets you from two round trips to one round trip. So basically, we take the two phases of the algorithm, and we run the first phase once, and then we say the person who proposed on the first phase, the first phase becomes a permanent leader and gets to do all the proposing until it dies. And that means that you can now do transactions in just one round trip, which is great. But it means that you've got this distinguished leader process. And this distinguished leader process is somewhere in the world. So let's say you're running a system where you've got some stuff in Western Europe, and you got some stuff in New York, and you got some stuff on the west coast of the US. So if your distinguished leader happens to be in Dublin, and you happen to be in California, you've pretty much got to go from California to Dublin and back again. And then to actually execute the transaction, your replica in California in Dublin has got to talk to the replica in New York to get a quorum. So you've kind of got almost two round trips there. That's really bad. So it's important to know that your perceived latency will obviously vary depending on where your master is. So like I say, there are new protocols that are coming, things like egalitarian Paxos and Mencius that use a rotating system for the mastership to avoid this problem. But as far as I know, they are not in any open source or production system yet. But I think this is something that we will see coming down the line in the next couple of years. There are some counterintuitive things that can happen. So here we are running six replicas. One of the rules of distributed consensus is that you need a quorum, and the quorum is usually a majority of your running processes. So here we've got six of them. We've got five data centers, and we've got two replicas in one data center and four replicas in the other four data centers. So a majority here is four out of six. This system running six replicas is actually less reliable than a system that is running only five replicas, or no more reliable at least. No, it's less reliable. What happens if our data center with the two replicas goes offline? We still have six in the Paxos group, or the consensus group. So that means that we can have one more data center go offline. In fact, it means that we cannot have one more data center go offline. My apologies, sorry. So if we lose that data center with the two replicas in it, we are down to our four, which is our quorum. Whereas if we only had five replicas, we could lose two data centers and still have three, which is our majority quorum. So in this case, running an extra replica makes our system less reliable because it means that we can be dead after losing only two data centers versus three. That's really surprising. So that's something that you need to bear in mind when you set up your deployment. Think about your failure domains and the number of replicas that you're using. Ideally, you want three or five in multiple independent failure domains. such that if one of them goes away, only ever one consensus replica goes away. Here is another fun thing that has been seen. So your leader processes, they use more bandwidth if you're using FastPaxos than your replicas do, because they have to send the full body of whatever request when they do the propose step. So here we got three data centers. So we have distinguished leaders are all kind of clustered in one place. And then we have followers in other places. So this arrow here represents heavy network usage, outgoing. So we have a failure, and that goes away. And now we've got two of our three replicas left. So everything should be fine. Our leaders all fail over to another data center. And now it turns out that the bandwidth between those two remaining data centers is insufficient. So this is a thing that can happen when you run a heavily sharded consensus system. So this is why we have drills. So this is something to bear in mind. I mentioned that you require a majority quorum to make decisions. So here's another scenario. So we got five replicas, two in Europe, two in the middle of the US, and one on the East Coast. If that East Coast replica is the leader, we're going to actually get pretty good performance because it can form a quorum either with Europe or with the US. And you don't have to do a transatlantic round trip. Well, you don't have to do a West Coast to Europe round trip. That's great. But if we lose that replica in the center, suddenly now the smallest geographical quorum kind of is from the middle of the US to Europe. So our latency is going to increase by about 50%. That can be unexpected as well. There's a solution to this, though. We can do better than just a simple majority quorum. There's a thing called hierarchical quorums. So you can now run nine replicas in three sets. And if you can get consensus from a majority of the replicas in either of the... a majority of replicas in majority of sets, then you can have a quorum. So now you can actually lose one of these things. Ooh. You can lose one of the guys in the middle, and you can still make a quorum because you've got a majority of the central hierarchy left. So these are pretty cool. This is a thing that, again, doesn't exist in... Actually, maybe this exists in Zab. It does. Yes, this does exist in Zab. Sorry, my bad. So this is a pretty cool feature, and people who have a whole bunch of data centers around and care about performance like this should definitely use it. There is another anti-pattern called dueling proposers. This is a thing that can make your distributed consensus system suck. So if two proposals overlap, and we saw the timing diagrams before, you've got your two phases. If two proposers keep trying to propose different things, what happens is your approving processes have to knack because they keep getting higher transaction or higher view numbers. This means that you can never ever make a decision, and it's possible to get a form of live lock. This can be avoided, and the way to avoid it is by having your network not sucking and dropping all the packets, and also by using sensible exponential backoffs. So if you get into the situation, you need to have your algorithms detect it, and use random backoff with jitter. This is which is a standard distributed systems technique. There are some things that are interesting to monitor about your consensus system. So always monitor number of instances up. You can't just rely on the system breaking, because if you're running five, you can lose two and you won't notice, probably, assuming you have sufficient network and assuming that your latency doesn't suck because you've put them in strange places. So make sure you're actually monitoring, and when your instances go away, replace them. And monitor for health, because you can have them in like a unhealthy state where they're trying to synchronize state from their peers and they can't. Monitor mastership changes, because you want that to be stable for performance. You want to catch if your system is unstable and doing the dueling proposers thing. There is a ID associated with all these algorithms, the view ID or transaction ID. That should continually increase, and that shows that your system is doing stuff. You want to do that. And you should monitor all the normal stuff, errors, request latency, and so on. So here's some stuff that's kind of interesting to read. How to build a highly available system using distributed consensus is one of the best papers left from the 1980s, I think. Henry Robinson writes about this stuff in a really readable way, and Paxos Made Live by our own Chandra is pretty good too. So I have a couple of minutes. We're actually running late, so I'm sure they might turf me off anyway, but hopefully I've got some time for questions. Yes.
Hello.
Hold it on your belly.
Okay. So we run a system based on Paxos, classical Paxos, and the most expensive operation we have in the master is a master chip change. So actually we avoid that a lot. So how does a system like the rotating master, like the ones you mentioned that the master is rotating, avoid these kind of operations that they are too expensive?
So the question is that when the master changes, it's really expensive, and it is. So that's what I was talking about there with the dueling proposers. You don't want to change your masters in the standard fast Paxos implementation. That's true. So how do the egalitarian algorithms work? They're very, very cool. So what they basically do is you essentially have a whole bunch of numbered slots. So slot 0, slot 1, and so forth, so on up to infinity, or int 64 anyway. So what you do is you have your n replicas in your service, so 5, and you just do a modulus, and you say, we got 5 replicas, everything modulo 0 belongs to replica 0, everything modulo 1 belongs to replica 1. So what clients do is they contact their nearest replica, and they make their request, and that replica just basically queues it until it's time for their numbered time slot. So you still have the global ordering property that distributed consensus is giving you, the absolute sort of certainty in decisions, but you don't need to do the round trip to an arbitrary. Yeah, so I definitely recommend the Mencius paper and egalitarian Paxos. They're both very interesting and pretty similar protocols.
Thanks.
Just hold it in front of your stomach. Yeah.
So if you have two nodes surviving and they have a split brain problem, so they can't talk to each other anymore, can you just pick one of them statically to be the master in that situation, or are there practical problems with that?
So the question is, back to my original slides where I have server A and server B and one is the replica of the other and they're trying to figure out who's master, can we just statically say if they can't talk to each other then A is the master? Well, you could do that. The problem would be that if A goes down then B won't fail over. And then secondarily, you might have like asymmetric network problems where one is getting the heartbeats from the other, but not vice versa. So yeah, if you'd have to think about this very carefully at the very least. Thank you, everyone.